This is Danny and Gallant, live from Peoria all this week on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app and 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Time to put on the show.
Ever had a tough day at the office? Maybe a couple things didn't go so well. Missed an ad read, perhaps plugged in the wrong computer to the wrong source.
The opening show doesn't fire and someone
for whatever reason
it.
Things go well, and then you just say, I was just working on stuff. I just wanted to feel good and comfortable when I went out there, and yeah, I felt like that. Location isn't what I wanted, but yeah, the results are what they are this time of year.
I'd love that for every single one of my bad takes, which there are a few. And on top of that, every single time I, you know, can't speak English. It would be great if I could do that.
Just say, I'm working on stuff.
Yeah.
Hitting my spots.
Eventually I'll be there, like 3 months from now.
I used to say that the most frustrating thing to cover as a newspaper reporter was preseason NFL football.
Oh, it's not fun, Danny.
Because any flaw that you see gets erased as well as preseason. We're not game planning for it, and we're not trying to win these games. It's about getting guys out and evaluating what they can do. Yet any success is perceived as this is if we're doing this and we're not really trying, imagine how great it's going to be. That I felt like it was as close as I came to writing puffery about the upcoming season, in which all warts were diminished and all strengths were exaggerated. And there's a little bit of that in spring training. The one difference is I feel like baseball players are at least honest about it, that, hey, the results don't mean a whole lot this time of year. And when Marco Gonzalez, he went two-thirds of an inning yesterday, he gave up three hits, five runs. He gave up a three-run homer to their catcher, Josh Flagley. And look, the different things that happen this time of year, the results aren't the most important. But it makes it tough to evaluate what's going on.
It really does. And it makes me think, like, imagine if we were a Northeastern sports radio station or something like that, and they had just acquired Marco Gonzalez. They give him like a $100 million contract. Is Marco Gonzalez the actual guy for this team? What are they going to do about him? Should they get rid of him? And here's the thing. Like, it's interesting. You have to go up a couple of starts before I think you can actually determine how you are feeling as a pitcher. And it is interesting that that's typically what they go to is, hey, I'm just trying to basically throw pitches for the first time in a really long time. That's what we saw yesterday. It was an interesting game. I think also we didn't really see a whole lot of the Mariners that we will likely be seeing for the most part this season. We did see Kyle Seager. We did see some faces in the outfield that we'll be seeing over the course of the year. But for a game two of spring training, it looked like it was spring training. It was a little sloppy. There were obviously a lot of runs scored. Was not the most, I would say, best impression of baseball you could get.
The outfield is going to be a bit of a work in progress. I don't know if we have a great idea about where guys are going to be situated to begin with. Jake Fraley was playing left field yesterday. Siri was in center. Made one great catch, nearly made another fantastic catch out there. But that's something that's going to round into shape. And Marco Gonzalez is an important player for this team in the sense that he is one of the veterans that is tabbed for being a leader in this next sort of iteration, this next generation. They want him to be a leader on this team.
Right.
It's good.
Yeah, and that means, okay, when you have a performance like that, I think you have to hold yourself accountable. And I did like that he said, yeah, I was frustrated with some of the stuff that I was doing out there. But at the end of the day, too, you can't take it too seriously when you have the kind of outing that he did, especially when you're going up against a lot of Cubs players that we actually recognize. This wasn't like they were going up against a bunch of random Cubs that probably won't be playing a lot this season. I mean, Chris Bryant was out there. There were some other good players, too.
Rizzo was out there.
Yeah.
Fegley is the one that ends up hitting the home run off of Marco. I think he was hitting sixth, former catcher for the A's. The scouting combine is also underway. A lot of talk about hand size. You discussed this yesterday. Joe Burrow, I would have been inclined not to draft him based on the fact that he is a one-year wonder.
Really?
I am leaning more toward liking him after his response to the report that his hand measured only 9 inches, however.
Okay.
The fact that people scrutinize this, which, look, that happens every year. You obsess over the measurement, like half an inch in a quarterback's height. People will make a significant deal about, like, he's only five. Russell Wilson was listed as what, the 5'10 and 5'8"? And like that became like a source of discussion, the 5'8"s. Like, was that enough? If he was 5'11", maybe people would view it a little bit better. But Joe Burrow's reaction to this, and he tweeted out, it almost single-handedly turned my opinion of him from going like, I don't know if I'd bet on a guy who just had one great year in college and had to transfer before he could play. And by the way, he's 24 years old, turning 24 years old. His tweet, quote, considering retirement, after I was informed the football will be slipping out of my tiny hands, please keep me in your thoughts. And once I saw that, I was like, that's exactly the kind of swagger you want from a quarterback, right? That's exactly the kind of thing. It almost flipped me 180 degrees on, like, all almost. Aboard. Look, you can't draft a guy based on a tweet. Like,
I don't know, man.
First of all, you don't know if he wrote the tweet. But that attitude is the most that's the attitude I would want any player that I would draft to have about the ridiculousness of the scouting combine.
Would you rather have a really hot opinion, a hot take on something in spring training or something at the NFL combine?
I like spring training. The combine is ridiculous.
It's so overcovered.
Yeah.
Rich Eisen is the best thing about it.
It's very good. When Rich gets out and runs the 40-yard dash.
In a suit.
Yeah, that's truly entertaining. There are going to be players. The entire media congregates there. I mean, I'm sure it's probably more than 400 people now. Like, we would talk about it. That would be the largest conglomeration of media. There would be more people there covering that than the Super Bowl because there's so many people that are fixated on the draft. The NFL combine is a ludicrous event. Everything from the fact that all of the interviews happen before they do anything. When would you want to talk to someone at a sporting event? After they do something.
Right.
Right? Like, that's generally the entire purpose. How did you feel about your performance? What went right? What went wrong?
Who did you talk to?
At the scouting combine, you have none of that because that's one of the first things they do. Why? Because it's set up at the behest of teams who want to see not really how they answer important questions, but how do they deal with an interview just generally. So you guys do our work for us, and then we'll have them go out and do the stuff we want to measure, and then we'll usher them out of town before you have a chance to talk to them about any of that.
Yeah, the NFL combine, it's one of those things that I think is made a much bigger deal because the NFL wants to be a year-round event. And what ultimately happens, I feel bad for the people that actually cover it seriously. The stuff that they do gets taken so seriously and is displayed all over the place. Like, someone just tweeting out hand measurements becomes like, oh, wow, man, he might not be able to play in the AFC or NFC North because his hands are too dainty and tiny.
Do you believe in hand size? I kind of do.
You do?
Yeah, a little bit.
Jameis Winston doesn't have the biggest hands.
No, I think it's Winston's, either his eyes or his brain, one of those two that's the bigger
those
problem.
Don't help.
Yeah, Russell.
Russell's got big mitts.
Yeah.
Got big old oven mitts that are out there. I kind of believe in hand size. I don't believe that 40 times are as important as everybody makes them out to be.
40 times. Do you realize, Danny, how much goes into a 40? Do you know, like, the stance that these guys are in are the most unnatural stance that you'll ever do? And I remember Gerard Johnson, former quarterback, he's now an assistant coach with the Colts, showed me how to essentially run a 40-yard dash, and he changed my stance, and he shaved 3.3 seconds off my time. And that's just the stance. Imagine practicing this for months and months so that you can get two runs where you get a good 40 time, and that is supposedly a measure of just how fast you are. I suppose it's a better tool than comparing film to film and saying, okay, this guy's faster than that guy based off of what I'm watching out there when a guy's wearing shoulder pads and is playing. But you will never, over the course of your career, ever get down in that stance and then run 40 yards in a straight line while in shorts. And this is supposedly the most important thing that we measure at the NFL Combine. It's ridiculous.
Speed is important. The idea of measuring something that can be gamed, that you can game the entire system by training specifically as a track runner trains, that you can boost your stock as a football player is hard. And I do think that the importance of scouting combine measurements gets overdone. Since Al Davis, God rest his soul, has passed on, you no longer have people that draft exclusively off of the physical traits of someone. But it is something that people look at. And the Seahawks are a team that is viewed as they like size-speed combinations. That's why Rashad Penny was a first-round pick. The size-speed combination that they have, they like a certain size at a certain speed, and they're able to kind of project based on how big this guy, how fast he is. But, yeah, the scouting combine is absolutely absurd. The underwear Olympics.
It's one of those things that I feel bad for everyone that's involved because I don't think it necessarily had to be this. But since it's just this dead period in February, when we're waiting for things to happen, this just becomes so focused on. Really, the most important stuff that takes place in Indianapolis all the free agency moves that we're going to see in the coming weeks, they are all happening right now.
Everything. The framework is being hashed out, and people are starting to find out about those things because the entire NFL world is there in Indianapolis. Don't feel bad for anybody. All those people are doing, all those buildings in Indianapolis are connected. It's like a giant hamster maze with sky bridges and tunnels under things so you don't have to go outside because it's so freaking cold at times. And then it's just going from one hotel lobby to another hotel lobby to hang out in the bar and trade gossip with different people.
Yeah, I understand that side of it. I think, though, that like when we talk about the NFL Combine, the people that actually cover it, that are like real scouts and people that watch these guys on tape, they actually use it as a tool. And we look at it because of how just ridiculously over-covered it has been over the last couple of seasons. And we sort of dismiss all of it. There's a use to all of it. But the fact that it just turns into this giant event, it's not that much of an event.
It's Danny and Gallant. We will be talking to Professor John Clayton from that event in about 5 minutes. But right now it's time to get you what to watch for.
What to watch for every morning at 7:10. Brought to you by Dublin Law Group. The first look at the stories worth watching today with Danny and Gallant.
The Mariners fell 16-12 to the Cubs in their spring training game yesterday. We were there. Marco Gonzalez gave up 5 runs in 1 inning. And we were sitting next to Danny, a very obnoxious Cubs rooter.
Yeah, it took a lot of restraint on my part not to ask, like, is that the first beer you've drank? First beer of your whole life? Like, why are you acting like this? He was suggesting that someone else warm up in the Mariners bullpen, and then he had the exceedingly witty heckle of, practice makes perfect.
That was bad.
I remember my first beer, yes.
Yeah, and then there was an observation about the political climate and different things.
Oh, yeah.
That's totally appropriate for a spring training baseball game.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Although
hot takes were had.
Yeah, the most entertaining part was debating about whether his companion, also in a Cubs hat, had wig or what was his actual hair.
Yeah, at first we weren't sure like what was going on because he had a mane. He had a long mane of hair, and at first I thought it was a significant other. Maybe it was a significant other, and then I saw his arms, and his arms were swarthily haired as if he was a lumberjack of sorts.
What to watch for.
The Mariners fell in their second spring training game 16-12. Marco Gonzalez pitched the first inning, threw about 30 pitches, two-thirds, got 2 outs, gave up a 3-run homer to Josh Fegley of the Chicago Cubs, and then was mercifully lifted from the game. But let's not get too carried away about the results. He was just working on stuff, you know? That's how it goes this time of year.
Just working on stuff. Didn't we just do this one?
Exactly, and the Mariners are going to take on the Brewers today. That is down in Phoenix.
You know what happened to Jose Altuve?
Jose Altuve got hit in the foot with his first pitch thrown at him. Danny, you literally just repeated the first thing that we did in What to Watch For.
I thought we were doing the scouting combine.
No, it's fine. So on his first at-bat, the first pitch of spring training, Jose Altuve got hit in the foot. It wasn't intentional, but it was pretty funny, much like that moment from Danny.
Are we just going to watch every Astros game today and say, did anybody get hit by a pitch? Did anybody get beamed? Did anything happen?
Was it on purpose?
To the Houston Astros? It hit him in the foot. You're not going to hit him with the foot, right?
Right.
Are you going to hit him in the foot? You shouldn't hit him in the foot. Like, that wasn't deliberate. But that wasn't what they were trying to do.
If it was deliberate and you hit him in the foot, no one would ever expect it. So you're not going to get fined. See? So if you've got some real pinpoint accuracy, he probably felt really good about his location after that game.
Fair point. Can I do the next one?
Yes, you can.
What to watch for.
Kobe Bryant's memorial was held at Staples Center yesterday. There were more than 30,000 roses that were on hand for it. And the most moving moment, I think, came tear-streaked cheeks of Michael Jordan. Commented that Kobe was having him cry again, and that was going to be the result in more internet parodies. Here he is.
And as I got to know him, I wanted to be the best big brother that I could be. To do that, you had to put up with the aggravation, the late night calls, or the dumb questions. I took great pride as I got to know Kobe Bryant that he was just trying to be a better person. a better basketball player. We talked about business. We talked about family. We talked about everything. And he was just trying to be a better person. Now he's got me. I'll have to look at another crime meme for the Knicks.
It's really weird to see him cry, even though we've seen him cry before. Because it's Michael Jordan. Just different, weird, strange. But it was a moving speech, I thought.
I thought it was very moving. I was also shocked that he correctly pronounced
meme.
Like, the idea that Michael Jordan knows what a meme is kind of blew my mind.
I'm glad he does. Because imagine not knowing what the crying Jordan meme is, which really took over the internet for about an entire two-year stretch.
It was pretty good. Do we have another What to Watch for? Did we cover the Mariners?
We got
yeah, we're good. We did that.
Who are the Mariners playing today, Danny?
It's time for the Morning Drive with the Professor John Clayton.
John Clayton's Morning Drive with Danny and Gallant.
It's a four-way battle, and there's only going to be three spots. Somebody has to go.
The first and final word on everything NFL from the Professor John Clayton.
Presented by DivorceLawyersForMen.com.
They scored 30 points a game. They're the best running team in football.
It's John Clayton's Morning Drive with Danny and Gallant.
Professor, are you there at the Combine?
I'm at the Combine. Hey, I'm kind of wondering on the Jose Altuve thing, if any pitcher is going to hit one of the Astros, don't you think two things should happen? If it's going to be a fastball, you hit him with the buzzer, and so you make sure that he knows a fastball is coming, or if it's going to be something else, you get the trash can on a curveball or a slider.
That would be good. Or just point at your own noggin and say, hey, this one's coming upstairs.
Yeah, I think that would be good. I mean, some kind of a good warning. You know, something that the pitchers can have fun with.
Yeah, steal this sign. Professor, we don't have franchise tag deadline like we expected today, but we're starting to get a sense of who is going to get tagged. Sounds like Yannick Ngakoue, as well as Matthew Judon, who are two of the top pass rushers available, are going to get tagged. It's probably good news for Jadeveon Clowney, right? He's going to be unrestricted, and he's the top pass rusher maybe available in this market.
Yeah, no question about it. And I think that, you know, there may be another couple that might get franchised, because I think you can see what the trend is. If you have an edge pass rusher, they're very difficult to sign because, you know, they're going to be asking for $21 to $22 million, and Ngakoue wants $22 million, and we have Clowney maybe asking for a little bit more than that. But now what you can do is that if you can't get the guy signed, you can get immediate value. I mean, you saw that with Dee Ford, Kansas City getting a second-round pick. You saw that with Frank Clark, you know, a first and a second-round pick for Seattle. And so it's going to be the same thing. And so we'll see how many of the edge pass rushers get franchised. But that now comes up Thursday as opposed to Tuesday.
I'm curious to see who gets franchised, John, but I'm also curious to see if both Ngakoue and Judon end up getting traded because, you know, for a team like Jacksonville, who seems to be unloading cap space, it would be sort of strange for them to maybe give that contract to Ngakoue, no matter how good he is. And same for the Ravens. It just doesn't really seem like it's in their DNA to give a guy like Matthew Judon that big kind of contract when they typically have let guys walk in the past, like Za'Darius Smith.
Yeah, and that's one thing. I mean, because the Ravens play the compensatory game probably as much as anybody in football. But then, you know, the problem is they lose two pass rushers because they lost Za'Darius Smith and they lost Terrell Suggs. Now, of course, Suggs was older and they weren't going to re-sign him and he gets $7 million before going to Arizona and getting cut. But, you know, the idea is it's like, okay, you don't want to keep losing all these guys and just getting third round compensatory picks the next year. So now by franchising Judon, you know, they have the ability because, you know, you figure that he could get at least $16 to $18 million a year. Probably can't command the 21, but if they can't get him signed, then of course you try to trade him.
Professor, any new updates? I know that the NFLPA and NFL are scheduled to talk today. I don't think anybody knows if even this is a further bargaining session because technically those sides have reached an agreement, I think. What's the next step with the ratification of the CBA?
Well, the big thing is that we're nothing new because they're not scheduled for the player reps who are flying in and the union is supposed to meet with the owners at about 5 o'clock. So nothing's happening before then. Now it's a matter of saying, okay, what can they try to work on with the players? Because again, the players, they need at least 50% of the player reps to vote so they can get it to a vote of the players. And, of course, if they can get it for the vote of the entire body, the 1,900 people, then I think they have a chance because, you know, more than half of those guys are in their rookie contracts, and they're looking year to year, not 10 years down the line. You know, they're thinking, oh, wait a second here. If I take this deal, I'm going to eventually get a 25% raise in base salary. I'm going to get more benefits. We're going to get more money. And even though that's against what the most of the reps want, and certainly the executive committee, you know, if it goes to the vote of the players, and again, what the players are looking to see is a bite from the agents. And some agents are saying, hey, this deal's okay. Other agents saying this deal is terrible. So who listens to the agents is going to determine where this vote eventually is going to go if it gets to the players by Wednesday.
The professor's in Indianapolis for the NFL Combine. The perception, apparently, in Indianapolis is that Joe Burrow doesn't want to go to Cincinnati. Are you hearing that? And there was also a rumor that maybe the Panthers are intrigued about the idea of trading up into that first overall selection.
Yeah, but of course, not what you wonder about. And I know he was joking about it yesterday. I know he talked this morning, Joe Burrow did, is that his hand size. Because he had a yes. 9 on his hand size, which is pretty small. And I mean, even though that Patrick Mahomes was a 9.2-inch hand, you know, that's, you can see that Mahomes is really, really good. And so, you know, Burrow kind of laughed about it. He says, well, I guess I have to retire now because my hands are so small and I have small shoulder pads. So he's joking about it. But no, I think that I think he now starts to realize that he's not going to have the leverage he anticipates. So if the Bengals want to take him, they'll take him. If not, I mean, he's still going to go very high in the draft. But I'd say right now, watch him to go to Cincinnati.
Do you guys know something about carnies are known to have small hands,
whoa,
smell like cabbage?
Didn't know
circus
that.
Folk? Yeah, I believe that that was from Austin Powers. He was. It's one of the things he's afraid of. John Chase Young, who I think is considered the best the best non-quarterback available in this draft, sounds like he's not going to work out at the Combine. Is that a surprise?
Not really, no. I think that, you know, he realizes he's in such a good spot. Why is like you can only hurt yourself more than help yourself, because it's not like he can help himself. I mean, most people, I think, grading this, you know, you saw how good Nick Bosa was. They think he's better than Nick Bosa. And if that's going to be the case, why risk injury? Why, you know, overdo it? I mean, your accomplishments are on the field and what you were able to do at Ohio State. And so I can understand him not working out. He'll do his workout at Ohio State.
Packers CEO Mark Murphy said that he really likes the XFL kickoff. John, I was curious to your thoughts on the XFL kickoff and if that's something that we could potentially see in the NFL at any point soon, because it seems like there's more action on that play than what we've been seeing in the NFL the past couple of years.
Yeah, and there seems to be less chance of injury because it's such a shorter distance and the collisions aren't going to be as violent as they are, because again, you're just trying to see if you can get to the guy and make sure he doesn't get past the 40, 45 yard line, which you see a lot of that. So no, I like the kickoff rule. The question is going to be, is the NFL going to take the position? It's like, well, we don't want to try to copy things from another league like that. And like, for example, you can see the resistance on Sky Judge. The coaches are really pushing the competition committee and the owners to go to Sky Judge. And it looks so good in the XFL and it looked good in the AAF. But right now, the owners are resistant to do that. So we'll see. But I think that, you know, they've got to look at a couple of these things. Now, on the conversion thing, what I've now come to the conclusion is the one-point thing is terrible. I mean, just go with a kick from the 10-yard line. You know, you're taking points off the board if you go for the 1 point. The 2 points, fine. The 3 points, fine. But I think the 1 point needs to go to a kick.
So you need to be able to have the extra point. I would tend to agree with you. It makes the score tougher to figure out, like, have that be a risk. We have yet to see a game that really comes down to being decided about it. I like having the option for a three-pointer. I think that that's interesting. I like how the XFL's instant replay has gone. I think it's an improvement over what the NFL has, which is shocking considering replay's been around since, what, like 1986?
Mm-hmm.
And it's so secretive in some ways where you don't know what they're looking at. The fact that the XFL opens it up and, like, here's the guy watching it and he's kind of talking you through what he's seeing, I think it actually makes it, for one, quicker. And the second thing is I think it narrows in pretty quick of the idea of clear evidence that it has to be obvious to you. If you have to look at it for 5 minutes, it's probably not clear and obvious. I think the XFL's replay system is better than the NFL's.
Yeah, the only thing is, and I think that I like the total transparency of it, but I can never think that the NFL would let that go on camera. I think they would probably resist that. That's just kind of an NFL type of thing. They like the, you know, going behind the closed doors and doing that. But I think, you know, having a sky judge, an eighth official at that game, and they can't say, hey, well, we're worried about the cost of it. I mean, come on. I mean, TV contracts go up over 50%, you know, based on the current economics of the industry and all that stuff. So it's like they can afford that eighth official as opposed to just having everything back and forth from New York.
Professor, we always appreciate it. We'll be grateful to hear your updates from the Scouting Combine when your show starts today at 10, and we look forward to talking to you tomorrow.
Okay, sounds good.
That is the Professor John Clayton. We are here at spring training thanks to Alaska Airlines with daily nonstop flights from Seattle to both Tucson and to Phoenix. We're hoping to talk to Justin Dunn, Mariners pitcher. He might be joining us next. We've also got more thoughts about the Seahawks and whether or not they will be pursuing Jadeveon Clowney and how ardently in free agency. That's ahead on Danny and Gallant.
You're listening to Danny and Gallant,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios
on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
It is Danny and Gallant, and we are joined now by Justin Dunn and your Seattle Mariners. Justin, well, welcome, and first of all, thank you very much for taking the time.
No problem. I appreciate y'all having me on.
It's getting to meet you last year and to learn about some of the new acquisitions. I'm struck this year where you feel like that group of people, you and Justice Sheffield and some of the other prospects that are coming through, that we can kind of now see the future of the Mariners that's right here. What does this feel like for you?
I don't know. It's a weird feeling, for sure, but we're just happy to be together. We're, as everybody's been saying, we're a really good group of friends. That's not a lie. We're all really close. We hang out together a lot on and off the field. We get along together. So for us, we're just playing. We're just having fun. And we're just trying to help this team win in whatever way possible. So we're ready for that time whenever they decide that we're ready for it. But we're ready to step in and help build on what's been already going well here.
This time of year is so interesting for pitchers because you guys get your first start. You've got your first start coming up. And then things maybe don't go as planned. It's all about like location. What's the strategy going into your first appearance when you're starting in spring training?
I think it's a little different for me being a young guy. You know, I'm coming in trying to fight for spots and impress and stuff. So I have to be game ready from game one. At least I feel that way. So my big thing is executing right off the jump, get my pitches where I want them, but also not be too ready too soon at the same time. You don't want to peak right now. I'd rather peak towards the end of camp and really hit the season in full stride. So there's a fine line between letting it rip, but also knowing that your stuff is there and backing off, but still having that same compete mentality.
Justin, the Mariners have worked to kind of get a group of guys together. You mentioned it, the you guys being friends. I've always thought of baseball as kind of the most individual of the team sports in that you've got a solo task as a pitcher, and it's a one-on-one matchup against the hitter. And I think probably I underestimate the value of chemistry. How important is that to a team?
I mean, it's huge. I mean, just little stuff from a couple days ago in camp. Me, Justice, and Ev went to the backfield and started working off a pickoff, something we were doing in Arkansas that no one even saw, you know. Just knowing I know exactly where Evan's going to be on the bag, where his hands are the quickest, where he likes the ball, where he can pick it. You have the chemistry. You get Jose Sierra to go run into a wall for you because that's your boy. You know, you guys go kick it off the field. You get super hype when Kalu goes yard in his first at bat because that's your best friend. So that chemistry goes both ways. We're friends, but we're also on the field. We're fighting together. You know, at the end of the day, it's a fight out there. So as many guys as you can get to join the fight with you is amazing. So we have a pretty strong group, and we're all pulling for each other. So it's pretty special.
When you're out in that minor league environment, what is it that bonds you guys when you're off the field?
I think there's just the grind of it all. We share stories. We laugh. A lot of it is just kicking it with each other. You know, we would have a Game of Thrones night at my apartment in Arkansas. We'd go eat after every game or whatever night it was and go eat and go right up to my apartment, put it on pause, go eat, come back, watch it. We have Bachelor Mondays here at Evan's house. So it's just little stuff like that. We just like to get together and be together and share stories and just kick it.
Interesting. So I got into The Bachelor like a year and a half ago. I'm just surprised as how into it I got. And it's getting close to the finale. You guys still watching it now?
I had to miss last night, but they are still watching. And I will be there next week for sure.
What do you like about The Bachelor? I've never watched the show.
I don't really like much about it. I just like hanging out with them. Ev gets super, super into it. So
really?
It's cool to see him get fired up and be like, no, we don't like it. Like, I'll like him on and be like, who do we like? Who do we not like? We like her. We don't like her. She's bad for him. This is who he needs to be with. So whoever produces The Bachelor, Ev, let Ev make your decisions. He's a great guy and he knows what he's doing.
It's a FOMO show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're talking to Justin Dunn here. With your second year in Seattle, do you feel that you've learned the franchise and kind of the what it expects and what they're trying to build here?
In a way, yes. I mean, there's still always a lot to learn. But I know this is a franchise that wants to win. They want to do it the right way. We want to bring in our guys and do it in-house and get back to the postseason for the city, because being there for the short time that I was there, you could see and feel it in the park that everybody loves the Mariners. Everybody loves the Seahawks. And when you can turn things around and get it going, that you'll get the whole city behind you. So we're just super excited to get in and hopefully get that whole process rolling faster than expected. But super excited, and we'll see how it goes.
You mentioned Evan White, and he's someone that I think we've gotten to learn very quickly, in part because of the contract that he got and where he's headed. What's impressed you about him as a teammate?
He's the most genuine person I've ever been around, top to bottom. The best way to describe him is the guy you let date your daughter. You know, your daughter brings him home. You're extremely happy. You can lay your head on the pillow at night, extremely comfortable. He has your back. I owe him a lot of credit. My transition last year went so smoothly because of him and Kyle Lewis. They took me in with open arms and kind of introduced me to their friend group and kind of helped me feel comfortable in Arkansas from day one. So those two guys are really special. And Ev, I mean, I really can't say enough good things about him. But he's just a genuine, genuine person.
You mentioned Kyle Lewis, that he's your best friend. And we saw in your first appearance, Kyle Lewis had his first game, too. He gets the home run off of Trevor Bauer. Yep. What was that experience like for both of you coming up at the same time and finishing the season together?
It was really cool. I mean, it was we had been talking about it all year of what it would be like, even from day one of camp, what it was going to be like when we all got there together. Me, Kyle, Jake, Ev, Lopes, Braden, Chef, Logan, like all of us just talk about that moment. So to be there to share it with Donnie and Art and Kyle and all of us have that same debut on that same series, it was truly special and something I'll never forget. And to be able to kind of go to the top step and be like, last month you were hitting homers in Arkansas and now you're doing it in the show off Trevor Bauer, like that's pretty sick. So to share that moment and kind of enjoy it with him. And now we live together here, going to live together in season. So we've gotten super close.
Is he a good roommate?
Yeah, he's hilarious. He's hilarious. Kalu. That's the best way to describe it. That's Showtime. Kalu, he's his own person.
What did you learn about yourself last year?
I bounced back, but that's something I already knew. Mm-hmm. Just that when I believe in myself, I can do pretty much anything. You know, it was good to get the confidence, have a couple good outings, and also get up after failing just to show that I can bounce back at that level. You know, I've done it at the lower levels, and you get up there and you hear how good dudes actually are. And then to kind of get smacked in the mouth, and in some ways I had some self-doubt that I could actually do it. But to have the progression slowly get better each time out was really big for me and helped ease my head going into the season this year.
I'm fascinated by how athletes bounce back and sort of the mechanisms that you use. What were the things that you thought to help yourself sort of put that past? Because especially in baseball, every athlete's going to have a bad stretch or a bad outing. How do you get past that?
Yeah, so a lot of that goes to the guys in the locker room, from Seager to D to Felix to Nasu to Skip to Fraley to Jake to Evan to Gilbert. A lot of those guys helped me through it. And it was just believing in myself. And Skip actually sent me an article after the game, and it was just about falling back into your routine and trusting that your routine will get you to where you need to be. And I'm a very routine-based oriented guy day-to-day. I couldn't tell you what day it is. I know I pitch on day five, and I work backwards from there, and that's how I know where I am in the week. But when I fell back in my routine and started to get comfortable in my own skin, just I always say little stuff in the locker room, like I'll shower pregame to kind of just wash away all the stuff from the day. But when I was when I first came up, I was scared to leave my seat in the locker room. So I showered at home. I didn't. I sat face first in my locker on my phone the whole time. I was scared to talk to Felix. I was scared to talk to Dee. I was scared to talk to Seeger. And when I finally got comfortable to get up to them and go talk to them and shower and listen to my music and rap out loud and just do all the stuff that I usually do and fall back into being me, is when the success started to come.
That's great to hear. I mean, it sounds like a support system that must have surprised you.
Yeah, I mean, coming out of that game, I was kind of expecting to be, like, exiled, especially when you get Showtime that makes stuff look super easy. I yell at them and say thanks for making my job tougher. But, no, to have D, someone I look up to, be legitimately the first person that came and grabbed me and said, listen, you're a Major League Baseball player. You did something today that no one will ever be able to take away from you. That was a very calming message for me to hear, and then have Seager grab me right after the inning. Tell me the same thing. Felix grabbed me in the locker room. Tell me it's the same game. I just got to get out of my head and go play. Those three right there helped me a lot.
He's Justin Dunn. I have one last question for
you.
Yes,
sir.
I am starting to try and collect sneakers.
Okay.
And I've been told that you're a person to consult about this. The first pair I bought were Air Force Ones.
They always have to have a pair.
A Pendleton mashup, so they're kind of yellow with some flannel.
Yes.
They're okay. And a couple of kids commented on them. I got compliments, so then I got a big head about it.
Okay.
What's the next pair I need to get?
You need a pair of all white Forces.
Okay.
If you're going to have a sneaker collection, you need a pair of all white Forces. And then, just looking at you off the top of my head, I would say you need some Jordan 1s.
Jordan 1s. Okay.
Jordan
Classic.
Ones.
Yeah.
Classic. You can dress them up, dress them down, wear them with shorts, wear them with jeans, wear them with slacks. You get the right pair. I've seen Jordan 1s wear it with suit, tuxedos. So you get a nice classy pair of Jordan 1s.
All white Air Force Ones. I don't get the black Air Force Ones.
No,
right?
You can get black, but that's big in New York. So if you're going to be in, and you live in New York.
Yeah, but that's kind of, I don't think I've got the toughness to pull off black Air Force
all
Ones, right? Because you can't trust people that wear all black Air Force Ones.
Okay, if you're going to get the black, if you're not going to get black Forces and you live in New York, I need you to get Timberlands.
Okay.
And bring them to me and I'll flop the toe for you. And you got to wear them with jeans, because if you're going to live in Manhattan, you're getting around that time where you're going to need
it. It's true. Justin, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Appreciate y'all.
It is Danny and Gallant. We'll continue from spring training next.
You're listening to Danny and Gallant.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Live from Mariners spring training in Peoria, Arizona. The Seattle Seahawks have some decisions to make in the coming weeks. They're going to have to determine whether or not they bring back one Jadeveon Clowney. And per Joel Corey of CBS Sportsline, it might be very difficult to do that.
He hasn't lived up to being the first overall pick, even though he's been a very good player. He should be commended for not shutting it down last year when he could have and worried about free agency because of the core injury, because that did affect how he played. But what you paid Frank Clark, he's probably going to want more. What you didn't want to pay Frank Clark, I should say, he's probably going to want more than that. And if I'm a team, the Seahawks, I don't want to go that high. I really don't want to go any higher than Trey Flowers, which is like $18 million a year. But Trey Flowers had a very player-friendly structure. I wouldn't want to do that. And Seattle typically doesn't guarantee the second year of a salary at signing, but has an earlier vesting date than most teams.
It's expensive. But, Danny, they don't have a backup plan.
They don't, but they weren't good with him. That's my concern, is that if you told me that, hey, they've got a top-10 defense and Jadeveon Clowney is your top free agent, I would say, yes, you need to re-sign him. The problem is you don't have a good defense with him. And if you re-sign him at that number, does it leave you enough to improve the way you need to improve?
Well, I don't know how you reload, though, for the pass rush if you don't bring him back. And you just think about the resources that you have this offseason. Now, we've seen guys like Matthew Judon and Yannick Ngakoue are probably going to get the franchise tag. So if you want to get guys like that, you're going to not only have to trade draft picks for them, you're going to also have to sign them to a long-term contract. So you're basically doing two things that maybe you don't exactly want to do. And on top of that, when you're drafting 27th overall in the first round and you have two picks at the back of the second round, you're not really going to be able to trade that far up into the first round, like maybe midway through the draft. So who are you getting that's that immediate impact player, especially when the guy that you're hoping would be that guy last year, LJ Collier, didn't do a whole lot? I understand it's definitely a nerve-wracking decision to potentially pay a guy who had three sacks $20 million a year or something like that. But I feel like even if, Danny, they weren't very good defensively last year, I feel like they're going to be so much worse, which is actually possible, I think, if they don't have him, because I just don't know who they build that pass rush around.
Can they be that much worse? I mean, that was a bottom six, bottom seven defense. And I guess that's what I wonder, is if you got a volume of players, if you ended up with four or five guys with to add to your defensive line and didn't bring back Jadeveon Clowney, you got the possibility that one or two of those guys is going to exceed and that the mix is going to end up being better. I'm torn. I go back and forth on this. I really do, because I totally get your argument, which is you're not going to get better by losing one of your best players. The flips and look, hey, it's the open market. You're not going to be able to buy a better player for less money. If there was a better player, they would get more money than Clowney. So you're not going to be able to purchase an alternative solution. You have to shop smarter. That's tough to do. That's tough to do at pass rush. That's why those players tend to go at the top of the first round. It's why those players command so much money. It's why Frank Clark got what he got a year ago, and you wouldn't give him. It's a tough question. I would tend to lean back to the, man, if you spend most of your resources on preserving the core of a not good defense, that's not a recipe for getting better.
That's true. The comparison to Frank Clark is an interesting one that's made between Jadeveon Clowney and Clark. I think it's a natural one to make. I don't know that we should make that comparison, and I say it mainly because of just the personalities of the two guys. Now, you know Frank Clark a lot better than I do, but from everything I've heard and from everything I've really heard this offseason, I feel like they're just two totally different personalities.
I would agree with that.
And I would wonder about giving Frank Clark a long-term contract just because I feel like there is a possibility to be unhinged side of him that I just don't think exists with Jadeveon Clowney.
Totally fair. Frank Clark's also been a more productive and had a more productive season than Jadeveon Clowney had.
Playoffs, too.
Clowney has never had a double-digit sack season.
Right.
And some of that, I don't want to get so hung up. He clearly makes impact plays. And there are, when he plays a full game, there are going to be 4 to 6 plays over the course of that game where he is in the backfield at the snap of your fingers and blows somebody up, whether it's in the run game or whether it's getting pressure, that he is a truly game-changing, disruptive defensive lineman. Seattle was able to find that in Michael Bennett, and they got that at Cliff Avril. That was a year where the market kind of came to them. I don't think you can count on doing that again.
That was a miracle, I think.
And the challenge that I have, though, with Clowney is that, man, if you spend $23 million on him, what room do you have left to do to address your other needs?
It's a fair reservation, and I'll just ask this, because you are wondering, okay, well, if he leaves, how much worse can the defense get? Would we agree that last year you felt pretty good about the defense's ability to stop the run?
Yeah, I thought it was better than their ability to stop the pass. Yes.
I feel like if you get rid of him on the run side of things, like I don't know what they're good against. And yeah, they had issues with the speed sweeps and stuff, but when things were happening in the middle of the line of scrimmage, they were not budging for the most part. And Clowney was a big part of that. I feel like you go back to like a square one, and I don't know what the first move is. Like, cool, you can sign one of these big guys to a free agent contract, but you're basically like losing resources to do that if it's Ngakoue or Judon. And
what if you just use all your draft picks on defensive players? Just draft a bunch of defensive players, because I think you can. And I'm exaggerating slightly, but honestly, defense seems like it's one of the positions where if you get a bunch of young guys that are aggressive and fast and hit hard, and you can throw them out there, and then you can kind of figure it out.
But you got to get them on the field, and this past season, they didn't play their young players.
So you take away all the veterans and force them to play young players. Sorry, Pete. Sorry, Ken Norton. All you have is guys in their first, second, and third year, and you're going to have to play those guys.
That is a bold strategy. It's Danny and Gallant, 710 ESPN Seattle, live from Peoria, Arizona, for Mariners spring training. Coming up next, it's Blue 42 with Brock Heward. What position might the Seahawks find the most value in wave 2 and 3 of free agency, plus some other questions? Don't go anywhere. It's Danny and Gallant.